Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason. This is Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. It is the halfway point in the Pro Wrestling Year Review Series, looking back at the Year of Our Lord, 2024, in the Sport of Kings. And again, with a stop in June, yeah, we're halfway through the series, halfway through the year, and helping do this month. Someone I was very excited to have on for the very first time, Garrett Kidney. Garrett, of course, you might know him from the You've Got to Be Kidding Me podcast, a TNA podcast focused on the history of TNA 1 month at a time. Really fun listen there. He's got some good takes. We talked about a few clips I recently heard from that show on the podcast that we're about to do. And yeah, we talk all about the month of June, which of course featured Forbidden Door, featured Clash at the Castle from WWE, all types of other news, of course, in TNA. You saw the TNA or NXTNA. Let's see if I pronounce that right. The beginning of this crossover angle between both promotions. We chat about that. Japan, AJ Styles heading over to NOAH. Io Sky heading over to Marigold. So some crossovers there. Big month for that. And all the other news from all around the world, professional wrestling. Some of which you probably remember and a lot of which that you probably forgot. So let's get right into it. Myself and Garrett Kidney talking for a solid hour about the month of June 2024 in the sport. Yes, the sport of pro wrestling. Enjoy. Well, the year interview series kicks on. It's hard to believe already halfway through the series, halfway through the year. They stop in June and help me do this as another first-time guest. I love having the first-timers here to get to meet new people, people I've liked their takes for a while or enjoyed them, listened to some stuff they said. I thought, oh, they might be a good fit, and I think this one is going to be as well. He, of course, is the man, one of the men behind the TNA History Pod, of course, Garrett Kidney. And Garrett, I am so glad to have you here and going through some history today.
Isn't that the fun thing about a podcast? And that, like, I think somebody's cool, I'm going to invite them on a pod. You have like an excuse to reach out to people you think are like interesting. Not to put myself on the pedestal of cool and interesting, but like it was the same. Well, I did like a podcast a day for a while, which was a terrible idea. It only got to 200 days, but it was the same thing. It's like, ooh, it gives me an excuse. I think that person's neat. I want to talk to them. Would you come on my podcast, please?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then when you don't hear Rack back right away, they're just like, oh no, they not want to come on. They just don't want to say it. You know, like all that there. I've been through that as well, but glad to have you. And one thing that before we even start going into the month of June, two videos I want to point out of yours that I heard recently, which I completely absolutely agreed with. One, so you can find this on the You've Got to Be Kidding Me, the podcast feed on YouTube, right? I'm not even saying this right, on YouTube. Obviously, we'll talk about, you know, how to follow you and check out some of your guys' work, but on You've Got to Be Kidding Me YouTube account, you have one that's called Micro and Analyzing Weekly TV Ratings Leads to Worse Outcomes for Everybody. You and your podcast partner Liam did that. It's a 5-minute clip, but I that came across my feed, and I'm like, all right, I definitely got to listen to this. And I completely agreed with everything that you said there, so I definitely have people check that out. And then you had that how do we encourage younger fans to be more curious, also on the feed. And I and this was related to, you know, Stan Hansen matches and so on. You were talking about like low key and I'll just have people listen to us. But I thought it was really interesting. And, you know, one of the reasons that I do this show, granted, it's more recent history, is that we are so we're so focused on let's move, let's focus. The next thing next week, like. And current day, and there's so much stuff that happened in the past that's really good, interesting, informative, and we never take a look back at it. And in that clip from your podcast especially really rang out to me as, I wish young people were young wrestling fans are more inquisitive, and instead of getting involved in the latest WWE versus AEW war, you know, go back and watch some old chicks. There's a lot of good stuff out there.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because there is, I think, never been more wrestling news, like ever. Like it's the fastest pace the industry has ever been. There's new news every day. There's a new talking point every day. We don't slow down. There's never been more wrestling content on television than ever. Like there's at least 20 hours of first run TV between, if you want to lump in like WWE, AEW, TNA, MLW, maybe a little New Japan. If you want to watch some indies, that's even further down. So I think the modern fan is just so swamped, so buried underneath a mountain of current wrestling that they're like, I didn't even get to Collision this week. Am I going to go back and watch 1997 WCW? Probably not. And it's like
Sure.
a shame because I think you do see like talking points reiterated that if you had historical context, you would just roll your eyes at. Because I think those two videos kind of tie together quite nicely. The micro-analyzing ratings thing, which is, we were talking about TNA in 2006 in the lead up to the return of Vince Russo, where every week in the Torch and every week in the Observer, there would be like so much hand-wringing about whether TNA did a 0.7 or 1.0 or a 0.9 and it down to a 0.8. When like the reality is, it didn't really matter. Like it didn't really matter whether or not they did a 0.7 or 1.0 because Spike TV were happy and moving them to Thursdays and moving them to prime time and eventually moving them to 2 hours. Like that's what mattered, whether or not TNA still got money from Spike. And but every week it's like, oh, they didn't keep this percentage of the lead in, and it just rang so familiar to the current talking points every week with like, oh, Dynamite does this, Raw does this, NXT does this, what's going to happen next week? And it doesn't matter, we just lose context of that like the grand picture of things. No one cares about a 1 week television rating. Like if they're down like X percent year on year, that's a thing worth discussing. If they're down X percent week on week, that's an aberration or just a one-off, or maybe it is a recurring trend. But in the like, we just get so lost in stuff that doesn't matter, and then you don't end up talking about like, for example, you mentioned Loki. Like Loki is a guy who will probably be forgotten to history. No one's going to be celebrating Loki's history. AEW's probably not going to do it. TNA will a little bit, I think, but not in the top 20 stars that will be celebrated from TNA history. WWE obviously aren't. So Loki is a guy that's just going to fade away without people championing him, being like, this guy was so important to early 2000s independent wrestling, right there with Homicide, right there with Amazing Red, right there with Samoa Joe, Bryan Danielson, those guys. Loki is right in that same conversation, but Loki falls away just because he doesn't have people championing him and people aren't going back to be like, oh God, Loki was amazing, which Loki was amazing at his very best.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like to go back to the question of like, how do you encourage it? I don't know, because like it should be easier to encourage than ever because it's all sitting right there. Like it's not like, me growing up when you'd have to get a tape, a literal physical tape, to put in a tape recorder and play back, like and finding that tape and like tracking it down. All of that is an arduous process compared to type Loki into YouTube and you'll get 50 Loki matches immediately. So it should be easier than ever for people to find this stuff, and yet they seem less curious than they've ever been. So it's quite a quandary.
Yeah, I agree. I miss the days of again going to a local store and finding a VHS tape, and one that was either new, because I think most of us, if you go to a place and you're renting tapes, they may have not had like the greatest stock when it comes to wrestling stuff. So you're watching like the same five events, the same Coliseum video, over and over and over again, and they finally get some new stuff. You're like, oh my God, they pop it. I still remember I got my first compilation tape from RF Video decades ago, and I was just like, this is incredible. It's all this other stuff out there because there was no real way to get it. And then you start like, huh, I kind of like this. So what else is there? And you just start kind of poking around and you learn stuff. And yeah, it's hard. I don't know. I think culture-wise, it's tough to try to get the young folk, as we say, try to get them to check out more stuff. But there's so much stuff out there. It's yeah, we'll see.
And it's hard to realize that like the stuff we watch when we were younger is now ancient history. Like
I know.
when you think about like, I started watching wrestling regularly in 1999. So to think about like, I wasn't watching, 1979 wrestling at that point. But like 20 years ago from now is the launch of TNA Impact, So like that's the kind of stuff that is ancient history to someone who is 18 now, and that scares me. I'm so old.
Yeah, I mean, look, I remember, there's a bunch of talk about obviously Saturday night's main event coming up, returning to Saturday. I remember the only stuff I had available was Superstars, and then Saturday night's main event 4 times a year, and I didn't even know when it was going to be on. I would just literally tape stuff every Saturday night, hoping it would be on before we started getting things like a TV guide and all these things. This is how like far back I go. So yeah, I know. Speaking of the pop, before we get to the month review, what made you two decide to start a focus on TNA? Just that desire to kind of go back in history. Why this promotion? Why this format?
Partially because I'm too lazy to write a book. It turns out a podcast is much easier than writing a book because I've also like I'm going to write the book on TNA history, and I've kind of accepted I'm too lazy to do it because writing books are hard. And the other thing is just like I think so much of TNA history has been misunderstood at this point. Like the lessons from TNA history, like you see the same thing, the same talking was like, oh, AEW shouldn't push WWE castaways, and like it was never a problem that TNA pushed Kurt Angle or Christian Cage. You know, those are big names, great stars. The problem was when they started like featuring Orlando Jordan and the Bashams, you know. It wasn't the fact that they took like AEW took Edge or AEW took let's say Miro. Like, well, maybe Miro hasn't worked out so well. Maybe a bad example. But Miro was a big star, good name, good wrestler. That was fine. It would be the problem when this it started seeping into like lower and lower and lower tier guys. So it was just like seeing talking points like that and like the misunderstanding around like why TNA turned out the way it did through the various phases of its history. And I wanted to kind of try and recontextualize that a little bit.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, check that out. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. But yeah, let's go to the month of June. So if you're new here again, I go through all these different headlines of stories that we did throughout the month in the Observer website, and I parse out some of the stuff really wasn't news, you know, quotes, pull quotes, you know, show reviews, those type of things, to try to kind of boil it down to what are some of the big things, some of the stuff we forgot about, which happens often in the series. It's always like, oh, that happened, I completely forgot, and that definitely for me happened here. We'll start with AEW this month, and AEW of course had Forbidden Door once again at the UBS Arena on Long Island, New York. And this the show is notable for a few reasons. We have a few title changes. Jack Perry winning the vacant TNT title in a ladder match, if I remember right. And of course, this was vacated due to Adam Copeland fracturing his tibia, breaking it at the cage dive at Double or Nothing in May. We had Mercedes Moné officially becoming a double champion, winning the New Japan Strong title, defeating Stephanie Vaquer. Of course, that would lead to her exit. We'll talk more about that in a later episode of the series. Britt Baker made her return finally to confront Moné, so that was obviously going to be a big thing and a big angle for the summer. Tetsuya Naito defeated Jon Moxley for the IWGP World Title on the show. Swerve Strickland handed Will Ospreay his first loss in the promotion. That, of course, Strickland defending the AEW World Title in that aforementioned ladder match. Lio Rush got injured, came back later on, though. However, the issues going into the show between AAA and CMLL were said to be worked out. Of course, that was a big thing when those talents not be able to work on the same show and all that stuff. I'm sure you're aware of. And then Jim Ross, who always seems to be recovering from some sort of ailment, was able to make the show despite an ER visit for his latest ailment at that point, which is a virus. But this show overall, yeah, I mean the Ospreay. I remember the you know some of the dialogue going into this was, is this are they going to give Ospreay the title now? It didn't seem right because Strickland had just got it in April. And was you know just in really just the early days of his title run, really kind of making him into what I think so many people think he can be, including myself, and what he's turned out to be now. And we had a couple title changes and so on. But this was as always, these shows are good and interesting, and some of the lead up is, you know, obviously very with CML being introduced, very TV's very New Japan and CML centric and so on. And they really try to, you know, condense it down into a few weeks of trying to get, you know, non-New Japan, non-CMLL fans really up to speed who these people are, why they matter, and why these matches at the Forbidden Door pay-per-view are going to be good. But what do you remember about the show and kind of what your takes are in the Forbidden Door series, so to speak?
Yeah, Forbidden Door is in an interesting place now because when you think about when this show launched, which was only a couple of years ago at this point, like the dream matches were like, who would Will Ospreay face on the AEW side? Who would Jay White face on the AEW side? Who would Kazuchika Okada face on the AEW side? And now all three of the names I just mentioned are AEW wrestlers. So it's kind of like this weird space where there's fewer and fewer New Japan stars who are well known to an American audience now than there may have been a few years ago. There's still like Tanahashi, there's still Naito, there's still Tomohiro Ishii. There's still some names there that have some cash. But like New Japan themselves, they're in a rebuilding phase. You know, they're trying to get Shota Umino over, they're trying to get Yota Tsuji over, they're trying to get Yuya Uemura over, Ren Narita, like that next generation of guys coming up. But you announced like, you know, Shota Umino versus an AEW wrestler. That's not going to set the world on fire for an AEW show the same way Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay did. So it's kind of interesting to look at this card and look at like where these co-promotional shows are, because we're getting another one coming up with Wrestle Dynasty as well on January 5th, which I think has some similar problems. It has Kenny Omega on it, which helps, but it has some of those, like, it doesn't have the really standout dream match in the way some of the others did. So I think more and more now you're getting kind of good, interesting cards. You know, Naito Moxley was a story they told through the year. They had a match earlier that year in New Japan as well, which I think was the better of the two matches personally than the Forbidden Door match was. But yeah, it's interesting to see these cards about like the top matches swerve against Osprey, which is an AEW versus AEW match, like, because Will's not a New Japan guy anymore, so you kind of have to work around that you've kind of poached the top guys that made this show special, and now you have to find more interesting ways to make it interesting, which they kind of have and haven't done.
I had this whole the partnerships that they've done. I've really enjoyed the CMLL one more than I thought I would. And talent like I wasn't super familiar with like Hechicero, for example. I thought the first time I saw him, it was just, I'm like, wow, this is awesome. Because I love, the Zack Sabre style. And it just was so, it was just different. And, Mystico coming back or come back in the US scene, so to speak, whatever you want to say it there. He's done dates for MLW and so on. But I thought how they presented them, especially kind of early on, that feud they had with the Blackpool Combat Club, I thought was really entertaining. And I think, I'm really fascinated more for them now than the New Japan, because it seems like New Japan really never leaves AEW, so to speak, right? Because like you have like Ishii that comes in is pretty frequently, and there seems like there's the kind of like you mentioned, they have Osprey and Okada, so it seems like that connection is just always there. Where CMLL, it's just the guys go away, then they'll randomly come back, and I don't know. I find myself at this point more interested in the CML side of things than the New Japan side of things.
Yeah, and it's as you said, it's the case that, like, these kind of dream matches, not that they're not special anymore, because they can still be, but they are regular. Like, they're a thing that happens often. You can get Gabe Kidd just popping up on Ring of Honor of all places some weeks, just randomly. He's there wrestling Serpentico for some reason. But yeah, as you said, the CMLL guys still feel like special. They still feel like a treat, I guess, is a way I'd put it. It's like, oh, the CMLL guys are on this week. That's new and novel. I suppose, as you said, New Japan, they're there all the time. They're part of the scenery of AEW at this point.
Yeah, I would agree. Let's go through the first chunk of some of these other headlines for the month. Matt Menard took over for Chris Jericho and the Rampage commentary team. Adam Copeland, as I mentioned, the fractured tibia underwent surgery. Still know when he's going to be back, but I think most people assume it's going to be that January 1st show in Asheville, rather, North Carolina. Chuck Taylor said he was hopeful for an in-ring return after his surgery. However, he has not come back. Got physical at some points, but still don't know if that's ever going to happen. I included this one, this QR code, because initially this kind of this when you hear QR codes and wrestling stuff, you think of obviously the Bray Wyatt return and all that the WWE did, and let you know that they did this over and over and over again. We'll talk more about the Wyatt Six in a minute, but this really didn't really lead to anything, and it was just kind of this thing where I think some people thought, oh, this is going to be really interesting, and it just really wasn't. Will Utah medically cleared and from that concussion, his return match was set for Dynamite. And then, fitting as we talk in this Monday, December 9th, Penta Zero Miedos, AEW contract was set to expire in the summer. WWE is said to be interested. Tony Khan was confident in re-signing him. This, of course, set off a summer of people understanding what contracts meant and how you can talk to people and signing. And people are saying, oh, they're automatically signed, both of them, even though they're still under AEW contracts. They couldn't legally do that. And that whole thing, more and more things we'll talk about in the months ahead. Alicia Toot joined the broadcast team, backstage interviewer. I haven't really seen her much lately, but kind of in and out. Bryan Danielson declared for the Owen Hart Foundation tournament, and they revealed the brackets for the entire tournament. Kevin Kelly say planned to sue AEW and said, I wouldn't treat my worst enemy how AEW treated me. Tony Khan said the timetable for Jamie Hayter's return was still pending. Of course, she returned in August. Dynamite Collision were set to head to Wales for the All In Go Home shows. Grand Slam official returned to Arthur Ashe Stadium in Queens, New York. The Elite issued a challenge for July for the Blood and Guts match on AEW Dynamite, the company honoring Brody Lee with a new Reebok collaboration. And then the company made their past pay-per-views and special events available for purchase on Triller. This is notable because there really wasn't any way to buy them that weren't full price for years and years and years. So you're able to go back and buy bundles and things like that. So if some people are going to want to check those things out, again, hopefully they all go up on Max in January. But if people want to check some stuff out, they could do so at a price that wasn't completely crazy. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, the Triller thing is because like I'm in Ireland, so I've always bought AEW events on Triller. So because I have, I think, bought every AEW pay-per-view, I think. I'd have to go back and double-check. Maybe there's one or two I haven't. And also they have the AEW Plus thing where you can get Dynamite, Collision, and Rampage like as the weekly TV subscription deal. That is my full like AEW library if I want it. It's funny to think that that is there outside of America. If you bought that stuff on Triller, it is still sitting there waiting for you. Hopefully all you folks in the States get that on Max, as you said. There's, I think, kind of an interesting pivot here toward AEW as the bad guy. As we see some of these stories pop up, particularly the Penta and Phoenix one, where, you know, I think wrestling fans don't particularly like the idea of wrestling companies adding time to contracts. I think, listen, it's if it's in there, they signed it, but also, like, they don't have leverage. They can't take clauses like that out if they wanted to, especially if the competition is also putting them into contracts. So it's not like you can go, well, AEW is not putting that in my contract. No, they're doing it too. But you can argue, oh, well, you're just enforcing clauses, but it does make the company look like a bad guy. The Kevin Kelly stuff depends where you stand on it, but it is certainly, he is claiming mistreatment. Mileage may vary on how much you believe he was mistreated, but that's to be determined by the courts. And I think that's like a trend through the year that like AEW came into wrestling during a period where WWE was arguably at their lowest in terms of fan sentiment. You know, it was shortly before or after that Hell in a Cell match between The Fiend and Seth Rollins, which I think is widely accepted as the low point for WWE of an era, probably.
Yeah.
So like the fan sentiment really bad for WWE. They came in as like the real good guy, and like the shift in that dynamic over the 5 years since has been really interesting to track, where WWE is now, you know, the good guy can do no wrong in any capacity, no matter what they do. And then AEW is probably like the other side now. It's like they can kind of do no right in any capacity, no matter what they do. So it's interesting to see those stories popping up even in June, as like the Penta and Phoenix one obviously has been the one that's probably escalated most out of these over the time since.
Yeah, I would agree. Those are good points. It has been interesting, it seems, this year especially, how that is amped up. Kind of funny how that works. Let's go through the second half here of other AEW stuff and some Ring of Honor stuff as well. There's a documentary on Swerve Strickland that was said to be in the works. I don't think it's been released yet, as we almost are here at the end of the year. Kira Hogan, remember her? Former TNA star. She was out of action with a shoulder injury. Dax Harwood also out of action after suffering a hematoma during a match in April. Tony Schiavone lost his voice during Dynamite. That was kind of just a quirky thing I wanted to include in here. Tony Khan said at this point he had never met or talked to Shane McMahon, but said the son of Vince was always welcome in AEW. Those two would actually meet. We'll talk about that in later episode of the series. Tony Khan said he was considering doing an AEW injury report show. Rio made her seems like quarterly return for a few matches, and before she got hurt or disappeared again, confronting Serena Deeb on an episode of Collision. Ultimo Guerrero explained mask issues that took place in this match at Okada on Collision. I include this in here because, again, this is just this weird kind of quirky thing that is so wrestling, where he had not wrestled with a mask for years, and part of the deal of him coming and doing a match was he was going to wrestle the mask, except he didn't know that, so they had to make a mask, and it was just didn't fit right, and there was all these issues. So it was just kind of one of those quirky, you know, this is wrestling things that happened during the year. Chris Jericho made a surprise appearance in CMLL and attacked Mystico, leading to their future encounter. Atlantis Jr. defeated Kyle Fletcher for the ROH TV title at an Arena Mexico show. Maximum Male Models scheduled to be at Collision. They were to eventually sign some sort of deal. Been somewhat regular shows on regulars on you know, Ring of Honor and Collision and so on. RD Evans, former TNA creative team member, now working for the company. Undertaker said that hopefully AEW gets their crap together one day. You care about what the Undertaker thinks. And Matt Sydal underwent right foot surgery after what he called 12 years of suffering, and he has yet to return. Thoughts about any of that?
Shane is a fun thing that's still not gone anywhere, which is kind of disappointing, honestly, because I'm on the side of it would be really funny for Shane McMahon to do AEW stuff.
Of course,
like,
yeah.
Will it be good? I don't really care. Will it be funny? Yes. So I kind of want to see Shane to do some random dopey AEW match where he falls off something very tall. And I'm sad that's gone nowhere. I'm glad The Undertaker is expressing his candid thoughts on AEW. good for him. I'm sure he had something very interesting to say that hasn't been said a million times by a million people every goddamn week. Yeah, it's the I kind of wish like Maximum Male Models is one I kind of focused on there as well, because I kind of wish that like that I like MXM. I think they're really charming and they're really funny, and they've kind of like fallen out of view toward the back half of the year. And they did some like fun stuff. I enjoyed Maximum Male Models, and I'm gonna tie two together because I kind of wish they'd do it. The Tony Khan Considering Injury Report show and Rio Returns is one of those things where like you see people disappear off AEW TV all the time, and they're like, you never know why. Like, and then it'll come out like 3 months later. It's like, oh, they're injured. It's like, why didn't you just tell me that? Like, if you just told me that person was injured, I wouldn't be like, why is this person disappeared off TV? Where's Wheeler Yuta gone? You know, like Wheeler Yuta disappeared for 5 months, and it came out as, oh, you know, he's working, he's injured, and then he eventually came back. But it's not just like, just say it. Just say so and so was injured. They're going to be out. So I'm not like watching TV being like, where'd this pushed person go? Why have they disappeared? Why? Tell me. I really wish they'd do that, and I don't think they'd lose anything from doing it.
There's no, I don't see the I never have understand what the detriment would be. You know, if they're like, well, if their mentality is, well, you know, we want to make the surprise that much bigger, I think there's only a few wrestlers where that would make a difference with, you know, and still, it's not like you have to give updates every single week. You just at the beginning, and then if they're going to come back in 6 months and you have something big planned, then you know, quiet things down until the 6 month mark. You know, it just, yeah, I think the initial thing, I think people understand, and there's nothing, I don't think it's, you know, a HIPAA violation for saying someone fractured their shoulder or something. You know, it is interesting. They were very, very quiet on certain things when it's not, you know, it wouldn't be controversial for them to explain what's going on.
And it's a thing that like WWE were very transparent about. They've gotten a little iffier about it themselves in recent years. But like for a while there, if someone got hurt, they'd just say it. So and so's hurt. They're estimated to be out for 3 to 6 months. You'll see them then, hopefully, if all goes well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or
Charming is a good word for Maximum Male Models, by the way. I was trying to kind of put my finger on that. Like, I enjoy them. I think it's funny. It's different. And, you know, nothing, everything has to be 5-star matches, or I think they're just an interesting, kind of quirky duo. And, yeah, charming is a great way to put them.
yeah, like I have issues with AEW's comedy, not because they do it, but that mostly it's bad. That's my problem with it. It's like I don't have a problem with them doing comedy. I have them do a problem with doing bad comedy. Whereas MXM, I find them like they're funny. They're like actually funny, as opposed to a lot of wrestling acts.
Yep, I would agree. All right, well, let's flip to WWE and their big event of the month. Of course, we're Clash of the Castle, I believe the second ever one. Not outdoors like the first one was, but this was indoors, I believe Glasgow, Scotland, if I remember right. This was a couple newsworthy notes out of here. Drew McIntyre, of course, going for the World Heavyweight title against Damian Priest, and ended up getting screwed over by the returning CM Punk, who made a surprise appearance. And, you know, depending if you didn't think he was going to show up or not, but he showed up and interfered, and cost Drew his opportunity to win the title there. The Bloodline attacked Cody Rhodes in the show. Damian Priest hurt his knee during this match. It got caught up in the ropes, said it felt like trash, but didn't require surgery or anything major there. Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn won the women's tag team titles in a three-way. And leading into the week, Drew McIntyre made a surprise appearance for ICW, a promotion he's worked for many, many, many times in the past, of course. And then he's also inducted into the Scottish Wrestling Hall of Fame. You know, I miss the Wales show in terms of just the presentation being outdoors. And it just felt like such a, you know, a bigger thing. But yeah, this was just another, you know, another PLE in a non-US country, and they've been doing these more often. And the, you know, the crowds are, I've said this before in the show, one of the things that they've really leaned into is getting international crowds to one up each other on PLE shows. And it all started, I think, I'm pretty sure it really started when Puerto Rico and Backlash, and it just, and it was like, oh, this, we can do this, and we can make a, you know, that make ourselves kind of known. And I think this was another, you know, another case of that. But you know, they sell out shows, they put on shows that have a few news notes, and we kind of just, you know, on to the next.
Yeah, and then they tell you that it is the highest grossing show in the history because they charge the same number of people a higher ticket price.
Yes, and they get them to cheer for it. I said
It's
that last
so
year.
funny
It's
that they cheer for
amazing.
it.
It's amazing.
They're like, thank you for ripping us off, WWE. There's 11,000 of us here. There's just like there was last time. Like, there's not more people. They just paid higher ticket prices. It is like, because I went to the 2022 Clash of the Castle. That was the last one, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so I went to the Wales one, which like actually felt like, as you said, an event. Like it was, because it was a stadium event with what 50,000 plus people there. I don't remember the exact number. Whereas, yeah, going back to there's just like a regular arena show, kind of took some of the luster off of this one, especially like the name. Like you called it Clash at the Castle, that made it feel big, and then you came back to just do, you know, a normal arena. But you are right that like that one of the big themes for WWE in the last year is them going to these international markets where, you know, between this and France and obviously Puerto Rico, as you said, it has made them feel hotter than even they already are, and they are very hot. But like you go to watch those crowds, I think the French crowd is probably the best of the lot so far, but it makes WWE seem like the hottest, most relevant thing in the world when you watch these shows in international markets. And like part of me is like AEW should just take their show outside of America for 3 months, as they kind of like, because like their atmosphere is kind of dire these days. So like take it internationally, just get that boost, get that jump start from international markets. Maybe that's what they'll do with the Australia show, I guess. But that is the defining feature of all these shows. Like the crowd is the star of these shows. They have some good matches, but like the crowd is the thing everyone will always come out talking about.
Atmosphere. Yeah. And for watching at home, it breaks makes a yeah, it makes a huge difference. And yeah, I was watching yeah, just, I saw random clips and obviously, you know, AEW pay-per-views are different than the regular TV. But I was watching it was something from Full Gear. It was the Young Bucks or Matt it was Matt Jackson or Nick Jackson and Hangman Page against Kenny and Nick or one pair of those. It was just like this, you know, 1 minute clip and the people just go crazy when you finally get you know the Hangman and Kenny going at it and yeah I mean that but that just it really makes you feel like you're watching something from home and that's something that, yeah these PLEs do so well is people are just like well if they're going crazy it must be watching something good and, you know granted it's not always good but yeah it's it makes it seem so much bigger and I think for the you know the non-internet connected, so to speak, wrestling fan. I think that's probably a big important thing.
It just becomes undeniable, right? Like
Yeah.
the match could be terrible, like on a technical level. It could be awful. They could be clumsy falling all over each other. But if that crowd's going crazy, you're going to get sucked into it. It's impossible not to. It's like the human nature of like those people are going nuts, so I'm going to be absorbed in it.
Exactly.
And like that doesn't come out of nowhere. Like crowd responses are a direct reaction to like character work, mad the in-ring work, like how hot the company is. It's not like the crowd is hot for no reason, but they're especially hot for WWE right now.
Yep. Let's go over the first chunk of headlines here. So there's some interesting stuff here. Of course, the latest in the Vince McMahon Janelle Grant lawsuit. McMahon not allowed at headquarters and the gym that he helped design. Missy Hyatt contacted Grant's lawyers regarding the alleged Vince McMahon incident. Randy Orton said it's nice having Vince McMahon out of WWE. And John Laurinaitis is just the ultimate worm. Filing a statement regarding Janelle Grant, the Vince McMahon lawsuit. Of course, he went from being against McMahon to being for McMahon. And probably the most interesting note, the judge officially paused the McMahon Grant lawsuit. This was due to the federal U.S. federal government requesting that they put a pause on that so they can continue their federal investigation. And we'll see what happens with that starting in early part of 2025. Braun Strowman said that he's working on a TV show. Tiffany Stratton signed with Paradigm Talent Agency. Big E and MVP received stem cell treatment in Mexico. Nikki Bella was cast on The Traitors reality show. Company applied for two trademarks, Caesar Sikoa and Tala Tonga, neither of which they've used, but I'm sure at some point, with depending on what inning the Bloodline storyline is in, we'll see those at some point. The company announced its first ever deal, licensing deal with the National Hockey League. Shinsuke Nakamura cornered a fighter at UFC 303. I thought this was kind of a fun story. He got to be friends with the father of the fighter years ago, and then he just asked. He asked, "Would you mind cornering my son?" Of course, Shinsuke has a background in MMA, so I thought it was just kind of a cool, unique, organic WB slash UFC slash TKO story kind of came together in a very, again, not organic way. Rhea Ripley was choosing rehab over surgery for her shoulder injury. Chad Gable re-signed with the company after it was called an excellent offer. AEW, there was rumors out there they were interested in bringing him in. Seth Rollins returned from knee surgery, accepted a world heavyweight title match for Money in the Bank. Ricochet informed WB that he was leaving when his contract expired. He was written out of WWE following a hospitalization angle where Bron Breakker lawn darted him against a trailer, tractor trailer, and he hit the cement hard. And he certainly went out on his shield, no doubt about that. MVP at this point, still with the company, said he wanted Ricochet in the Hurt Business factions that we kind of see alluded to in the early days of the Hurt Syndicate and AEW, and I'm sure we'll see more of that as time goes along. Hikuleo was expected to join WWE, and he did. Booker T said his WWE contract should be coming up soon. Now it's a thing with every known talent that if they're going to re-sign, they put this teaser out to start getting some buzz about them, saying their contract should be coming up soon because people can start speculating. Uncle Howdy resurfaced on Raw and revealed the new Wyatt Six group. And of course, the latest QR code, they did a whole very similar, not fully like full on like White Rabbit, but they still were trying to do the clues and the hints and all this stuff to get people really interested in it. And The Rock suffered an elbow injury during filming of the movie The Smashing Machine, a movie on MMA legend Mark Kerr. And then later saying, "We're on the 1 yard line of the quote unquote biggest match of all time at WrestleMania 41. We still don't know what that is or what his status is for Mania 41. Thoughts about any of that?"
Isn't the rumblings also that he's not going to be there? Like,
Of
that's the
course.
current prevailing rumor. So
Yes.
that 1 yard line, he got denied on that 1 yard line for that
Right.
biggest match of all time. I guess you can't start anywhere but Vince. The John Laurinaitis thing, like, maybe I'm naive, maybe I am but a simpleton, but the idea that you can be like, yes, I was also a victim of him, and then turn around a few months later and just go, no, actually, I'm on his side, feels like a thing you just shouldn't be allowed to do.
Exactly. It's just awful.
Could you imagine doing that in like school? Like if you tried to do that in a much lower stakes environment, somebody would think you're full of shit and probably give out to you and punish you in some way. But no, you can just be like, yeah, he's terrible. He also abused me. And then also be like, no, actually, he's my friend and she's wrong. Like, you can't do that. You just can't. I hate everything. The contract stuff is interesting because you see WWE do it a lot, I think, as a conscious PR strategy these days. Where they will put it out there that a certain somebody's contract is coming due. Maybe they'll go somewhere else. Maybe they won't. And I think they wait for someone to start biting on that. Like the second it starts like getting out there that, oh, Chad Gable might be interested in going to AEW. Or I think they kind of did the same thing with Obafemi this weekend in NXT, where it's like, oh, might he be going somewhere? Oh, wouldn't that be interesting? So they can then immediately announce it as like a win over AEW. That's like, oh no, he was never going anywhere anyway. But we've loaded it out there just enough so that it would seem like a win when he stays with us. So AEW takes a hit. I think that's kind of a conscious strategy they're doing at the moment, and it's working. So you know what? Can't condemn it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's funny. We see more and more of this, the Kevin Owens stuff that came out. And yeah, it's definitely a trend for sure. And yeah, that's a great point. You're able to just tweak the AEW thing, like, oh, they chose us versus they were not even going to consider going across the street, so to speak. So yeah, interesting stuff. Let's go with the other second chunk here. WWE and Manchester City Football Club, launched a new merchandise collaboration. CM Punk also signed with Paradigm Talent Agency, and at this point, he'd hoped to be medically cleared by an episode of SmackDown. And of course, this is going with the Drew McIntyre stuff. So he was definitely physically cleared for physical contact, but he was not did not have a match until much later on. Drew McIntyre's wife underwent emergency surgery. The company promoted John Swicata, a creative team member, to be the SmackDown head writer. Asuka was undergoing injury rehab following her knee surgery. George Kittle, San Francisco 49ers tight end, said he was told not to do that again. Don't do that again after his physical appearance at WrestleMania 39. I think it is a no doubter that he is going to be going into wrestling at some point. His career is done. Obviously, a huge fan of Penta, so I'm sure they'll lean into that, assuming that Penta does sign with WWE at some point this year or next. Undertaker said he's open to future cameos, but not coming out of retirement. Jacob Fatu made his debut on SmackDown, of course, aligned with the Bloodline. Kayla Braxton, a little bit of a surprise, announced her impending departure from the company. Triple H said the company won't have issues on Netflix with censoring crowd chants and promos. Of course, I include this in here with Nick Khan saying this past week that the company is still going to remain family friendly on Netflix. So we'll see how that works. Company announced a deal to bring WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, and SummerSlam to the one and only Indianapolis, Indiana. Finn Balor and JD McDonagh won the World Tag Team titles on Raw. Kevin Owens said his son got in the ring for the first time and a WWE career, quote unquote, might be an avenue. Keep your kids away from wrestling, friends. Just keep them away. Ludwig Kaiser got hurt in a Raw match. Pat McAfee missed an episode due to the death of his father-in-law. Again, Chris Kaiser, the company's executive VP of television, was fired just this constant kind of, I want to say revolving door, but the slow bleed of all these longtime WWE employees that are getting fired along the way the past couple of years has been pretty interesting to watch. Actually, since September 2023 when the merger happened. The company announced a new date for the WrestleMania 40 Behind the Curtain documentary. Had nothing to do with The Rock, of course. Nothing to do with The Rock getting his narrative out there or whatever. That's what Brian Gort said anyway. Sika Inoue, Roman Reigns' father, passed away. The company announced they were returning to the UK and Ireland, so announced a full slate of tour dates there. They also, again, they were looking to partner with everyone. They want to be friendly with everyone, Garrett. They wanted to partner with promotions in both Mexico and Puerto Rico. Sami Zayn was set to do a comedy show for Money in the Bank week. And then Donovan Dijak departing the company as his contract was not renewed. A big surprise for him, as he talked about. He said he should have been a little bit better prepared, but I think within 3 days, he had already made his first indie show appearance and has been working on the indies pretty nonstop since then. Thoughts about any of that?
I would really love to know what happened with that Behind the Curtain documentary. I would love to know what happened because, like, they delayed it by 2 months. So, like, it can't just have been like, oh, it needed a little extra time to edit because they announced that it, like, what, at WrestleMania that it would debut later that week, and then it didn't, and it just disappeared for 2 months. And I didn't even watch it when it came out, to be
I
honest.
didn't either.
So I have no idea what's in there, but I would be fascinated to know, like, why exactly did they delay that thing, and how much did they want to, like, mold that message of what actually happened around, the Cody Rhodes stuff, say, heading into WrestleMania, and how much they wanted to sculpt that narrative a little more rather than just we completely misread our audience and had to pivot at the last minute, which I doubt is what they said they did, but
Yeah, the so in the May episode, as I just mentioned, Brian Gewirtz, he was the one. He basically said The Rock doesn't have anything to do with it. I will say, I also know in that episode, I'll note it here. So The Rock, so we get, we post stories and stuff. We get images, and a lot of we get from WWE.com, and I usually get some from, they do a gallery of Raw and SmackDown and pay-per-view after, which is really helpful, high res stuff, whatever. And we noticed our leader Joe knows this. He's like, you notice that the anything from Raw with a Rock in it is always delayed by like a day or sometimes a day and a half. They're not up there really quick like all the other ones are. I was like, really? And then I started noticing that these big angles that would take place on Raw and the SmackDown, it would take a solid day before any pictures with the Rock made their way up to WWE.com. So I'm just like, well, if they. He's obviously very heavily, not vetted's not the right word, but very protective, and his
image
team of
conscious, some might say, yeah.
image conscious, perfect way to put it. So yeah, I could see, Brian Gort said he wasn't involved with it or whatever. I have a hard time believing that his need to have this tell the story he wanted to really tell while fitting in with the rest of the story that they want to tell. I just have a feeling that was one of the reasons it was delayed.
Yeah, and like he's not just talent either. He's on the board. So like the idea that he didn't really mind, to be honest, I don't believe for a second.
All right, let's go to NXT. A few headlines here. Javier Bernal suffered a broken foot and underwent surgery. They had NXT Battleground. Jordynne Grace, of course, TNA, challenging Roxanne Perez for the TNA or the NXT women's title. Got her earring ripped out during the title match. Ash by Elegance appeared during the women's title match, which was just very strange. Hey, the I blank on the NXT lead announcer's name, but he
Vic
said,
Joseph.
yes, Vic. So he said Dana, and then he just stops it. Oh, Ash by, and kind of switched that. So we're going to talk a little bit about this. This was really kind of the month that things really kicked off with this TNA NXT relationship. Kalani Jordan was crowned the first ever women's North American champion. Sexy Red, one of the big stars of the summer, involved in an airport brawl prior to Battleground. Of course, she still appeared on the show. Eddie Thorpe, his return was made official for NXT after being out for months with an injury. Noam Dar, out of action after suffering what he said was a torn tendon. NXT on the CW's official debut set for October 1st. Joe Hendry, Frankie Kazarian appear in a battle royal on NXT TV. Cody Rhodes shared this this moment with Sean Spears and Ethan Page on NXT, and now of course internet did with that what you might expect. Gigi Dolin is believed to have suffered a torn ACL. Of course, she did suffer that and just actually returned over the last couple weeks. And then Javon Evans was set to challenge for the NXT title at Heatwave. So yeah, I mean this, and we'll talk more about this in the TNA section. The crossover certainly kicked off in earnest in June.
Yeah, the Asprey elegance of hearing spots funny to me because like the Dana Brooke thing was clearly not a slip of the tongue. It was clearly a I have to start calling her Dana Brooke so the audience knows who she is. So when I say Ash by elegance, they're not like, who the hell is that? It's like that was very clearly a conscious choice, and I found that very funny. Like yeah, the big thing, probably especially Joe Hendry. Joe Hendry, I believe, is the most watched WWE Twitter clip this year, that moment of him appearing in that Battle Royal. So that did shake the internet as Joe's. That was made, probably the peak of Joe's viral sensation is probably not the right way to put it, but that's certainly one of the moments for him this year, and the overall relationship, which I guess we'll talk a little more about in the TNA section. Other than that, like Javon Evans, fair play to the folks at Deadlock Pro, like for they were the ones that discovered him before he got signed to WWE, and now he's like going from strength to strength, and I think has been one of the bigger success stories in NXT this year. So DPW winning, the best place for talent development in wrestling. So shout out to the boys there. But yeah, like interesting to see the TNA stuff and where that has gone and developed over the summer, I guess.
Do you think it's a fait accompli that Jordynne Grace signs with WWE or in a couple months when she's a free agent?
Well, we'll have to see how it goes. Like, there are people who are like, "Oh, WWE have only done this relationship to sign Jordynne Grace." It's like if they wanted to, they could have anyway. You know,
That's true. Yeah.
it's not like there's this fundamental barrier in the way. It's like if WWE backed up a boatload of money to Jordynne Grace, that's going to be the reality of the situation, regardless of whether there is a relationship there. We'll have to wait and see. I'd imagine so, but you have to wait and see.
Yeah. Let's go to TNA. The company parted ways with their VP of marketing, Lou D'Angeli, who I believe is he Sign Guy Dudley? Do I have that right?
Sign Guy Dudley. Yep.
Yes, of course. Also hired former WWE executive Rob Klickman as their chief revenue officer. TNA Impact was finally set to air on TNA Plus in addition to Access TV. They did this thing forever. You could buy essentially a $1 per month subscription to watch Impact live every week. When I was doing some recaps and stuff, that's how I'd watch it. But we also had a TNA Plus sub, but you have to wait hours before it went up. So I was glad to actually see this happen. Company announced their total nonstop summer tour leading to Bound for Glory. Slammiversary was coming into shape for July. Moose defending his world title in a six-way. So it would obviously start with some qualifying matches and so on. They held against all odds. Moose taking on Matt Hardy. And a Jordynne Grace open challenge, which was answered by NXT's Tatum Paxley. Jeff Hardy made his return to the promotion on the show, as most expected. The company signed a good young tag team out of Pacific Northwest, Sinner and Saint, Judas Icarus, and Travis Williams. And they would align with Josh Alexander. Company announced dates for both Emergence and Victory Road. And again, talk about more of the crossover. We had NXT wrestlers appearing at TNA Impact Saturday TV tapings. And they did a weekend of tapings, and then they appeared at both. And kind of again, that fusion between both groups was continuing. Thoughts about any of that?
Tatum Paxley is one of those interesting trivia questions in 5 years. Who was the first contracted WWE wrestler to wrestle in TNA? It is Tatum Paxley. Not a
Oh,
peer. A peer is Christian from Slammiversary 2012. But first to wrestle is Tatum Paxley. That's a fun trivia note for you at some point.
I like it, yeah.
But yeah, like the NXT relationship is the defining part of this. And like I'm not as down on the AEW relationship as some people have kind of retroactively turned out to be. Like the idea that there's this imaginary version of 2021 Impact Wrestling that was hotter than it would have been without Kenny Omega on the shows every week is a total fallacy. Like it's totally false, especially during those empty arena pandemic days. Like having access to Kenny and having TNA mentioned on AEW, there wasn't as much crossover as everybody would have liked. But having like Kenny and having Private Party and having Frankie Kazarian and people like that pop up on Impact really helped during what was a lean period in wrestling during the pandemic when you couldn't get out in front of fans in particular. So I'm not like, oh, you know, the AEW relationship was terrible and the NXT relationship is so much better. But like the NXT relationship is, at least during the summer months, is pretty unparalleled. Like there was a lot more crossover than you would have expected. There was like basically every week there was a TNA wrestler on NXT. Like you talk about it further into the summer with the likes of Hammerstone and people like that showing up in Rosemary as well. So Like I think it's pretty undeniable. You've seen the business of TNA pick up over the summer as this relationship has developed. It has been undeniably a positive for TNA in terms of like at least fan sentiment and in terms of fan awareness and getting people out to go to those shows. When you see the number of Slammiversary drew, the number of Bound for Glory drew, the buildings TNA is running next year, which are very ambitious.
Yeah.
So like it's undeniable that all this stuff turned into a pretty strong positive for TNA at least through the summer. And like it helps to have Jeff Hardy, who is, for all of his faults, a legitimate mainstream pro wrestling star. Like, put Jeff Hardy on a poster, you will sell more tickets because he's Jeff Hardy, no matter what. That helps too, stuff like that. But yeah, that's the kind of defining thing of TNA this year, even more than this month, is the NXT stuff, I think.
What is someone that is obviously more familiar with the company than most? What is your like as we go into 25? Are you positive on TNA and kind of where do you see they fit in the landscape as we enter 2025?
You hope all that momentum translates into something, right? You hope it's not just, because like that's the big critique you can throw at the AEW thing is it was good while it lasted, but it didn't last. Like the fans came to watch Kenny Omega and they didn't stay when Kenny wasn't there anymore. And like that's going to be the thing for TNA next year. It's like how much are these people going to be there for TNA? And hopefully it's a lot. And hopefully they're into the stories and they're into Joe Hendry and they're into the characters. And hopefully there's good matches and payoffs and stories that keep them there. But that remains to be seen. Is it dependent on the NXT involvement, or do you hope that some of the fans are sticking around and interested in TNA for TNA's sake?
Were you as surprised as most that Scott D'Amore was let go?
Yes, but. Those decisions, I don't know. I don't
Well put, well put. Let's go to the month of Japan and the WWE again. Their partnerships globally continue because they had a big announcement with Noah, and they announced that AJ Styles will be heading overseas to face Naomichi Marufuji at Noah's Destination 2024. And that Io Sky is part of the relationship with Marigold. I was going to wrestle Uma Hayashi. Oh my God, I practiced this and I'm screwing up. Hayashishida at Marigold Summer Destiny. So that was obviously two well-known names going overseas. And obviously the Noah relationship is grown, and a few guys, Charlie Dempsey has gone over there, so we'll see what happens more of that in the year ahead. New Japan making their strong titles exclusive to United States shows. The company announced the remainder of their big event schedule for the year. They crowned a Best of Super Junior 31 winner, that being El Desperado. They revealed their G1 Climax 34 tournament format and the field. They had a tournament, a couple tournaments, or mini tournaments, so to speak, fought for the final two slots in the Climax tournament. New champions were crowned at Dominion. Yosuji, Takahashi, and Bushi won the Never Six-Man titles, and Shane Hayes and Mikey Nichols came away with both the IWGP ta tag team titles and also the Strong tag team titles as well. Great Okan winning the provisional King of Pro Wrestling title. Shota Umino was dealing with a back injury and also a fractured hip, had to miss their New Japan Soul event. Kota Ibushi was to celebrate his 20th anniversary with a 5-minute exhibition, which I'm sure when that was announced, people were just kind of like, oh boy, what's going to happen here? And then they announced new title matches are moving ahead full steam for their crossover event with Fantastica Mania with CMLL coming up as well. And that stick out to you.
The build up to G1 is interesting now in hindsight. I think the big talking point being, New Japan's next generation. How are they going to do? Like, this is the first G1 without Okada in a decade, without Will Ospreay in whatever 4 or 5 years, however recently he's been in G1s. Pandemic throws my sense of that off, but whenever he moved from a junior to being in G1s. So seeing that like new generation have to step up, and Tanahashi wasn't even in the G1 this year, which was crazy, it turned out. Like, neither was Tomohiro Ishii. So like taking what was the core of like the G1 climax for a decade with Tanahashi, Ishii, Okada, and then also Ospreay, taking that out of that tournament and putting it on the shoulders of Yota Tsuji, of Yuya Uemura, who came back from excursion this year as well. That I think that was interesting to look back on now and see how they did. And I think like there wasn't the same interest in the G1 this year coming out of it, but Zach winning it, I think people were happy with. And then I think the young lads, I think, had a good showing for themselves. Particularly Yuya Uemura, who ended up having a very good G1. But yeah, looking at that again, that like the generational shift happening in New Japan at the moment, somewhat being forced to, because like a lot of their big names have been signed, and Tanahashi is, I think, deteriorating at a pace that people didn't probably expect, and Naito obviously can't handle that entire company on his back by himself at this point. But I think they are looking back at those names and looking back at how the G1 turned out. I think they could be pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I'm interested where Tanahashi fits in this year's Forbidden Door, or 2025's Forbidden Door, rather. If I feel like there has to be one that, he was originally gonna have one last match with Okada, but that got scrapped due to Tanahashi being injured. I have a feeling we're gonna have one last clash between them, and I wonder if Forbidden Door is gonna be it.
Yeah, it would make sense. Like the next year is Tanahashi's final year in wrestling, so
Yep.
like
Yep.
that's a big deal. So I would hope that he would have a big match at Forbidden Door. There is like obviously the expectations of like Hiroshi Tanahashi can't deliver a Hiroshi Tanahashi performance anymore, which is a shame to see. But in his last year, you would want him to be in those big spots and those big situations, and Forbidden Door is probably the best place to do it if they can do it anywhere.
I mean, it's either that or Big Boom AJ. I don't think you can go either way,
Tanahashi versus the Rizzler.
Oh my God. Yeah, at that point we've kid, but at this point anything can happen. Anything can happen. You never know what is going to happen in wrestling. Let's go through the junk drawer. This is everything that did not fit in any of the categories above. Goldberg said he would love to have one final match. However, needs to take care of an injury first. Of course, he was not affiliated with WWE at this point. That would change a little bit later on throughout the year. Former head of Turner Broadcasting, Jamie Kellner, very influential in WCW for a variety of reasons, passing away at 77 years old. Drew Gulak announced for his post WWE indie appearance, this being after his contract was not renewed. Triple H shocking after, yeah, they just didn't renew the contract. Of course, this came after the Ronda Rousey revelation about the sweatpants string pull incident. So, yeah, that happened. Mark Henry made his appearance at MLW Battle Riot 6 following his departure from AEW. Matt Riddle winning the big match there of the night. Company announced they were going to turn to Atlanta for their Fightland event. Matt Riddle had to miss some weekend indie matches after an Uber accident. Mance Warner won the GCW title at Cage of Survival 3. Jinder Mahal and Xia Li were announced for their post WWE appearances after their release in May. Beyond Wrestling indefinitely suspended one of their executive producers due to a code of conduct violation. Triple Mania 32 happened in Tijuana. Satin Singh pinning Vampiro in a headline I never thought that I'd see. They had this mysterious eye angle, a mysterious eye video that ran. So some lean to some angles or so on forth there. Satin Singh not done with AAA. He and Jinder Mahal set to challenge for the AAA tag team titles at their August Triple Mania event. Bloodsport Shido happened in Tokyo, Japan. The first time Bloodsport went over there is headlined by Josh Barnett against Jon Moxley. WWE Shayna Baszler set return for the 11th Bloodsport later in the year. Two Cold Scorpio was arrested after a stabbing, claimed self-defense, but had to miss a tour of Japan. Cody Rhodes bought a quote-unquote proper wrestling ring for Uganda's Soft Ground Wrestling. And we learned later in the year that Soft Ground Wrestling may not have been as on the level as some people thought. It was supposedly just a nice feel-good story. And turn out to be something else a little bit different. We'll talk about that later in the year. Ric Flair blaming the three-headed monster for killing WCW, and then within like 2 days, issued an apology to those three heads, being Eric Bischoff, Vince Russo, and Jim Herd. Rhea Ripley and Buddy Matthews got married. Cassie Lee and Shawn Spears welcomed the birth of their second child. Independent wrestler Scott Hansen passing away at age 40. UK indie wrestler James Castle passing away at just age 35. Scripps wrestled his first post-WWE match at GCW, hit him up, and certainly the start of a really impressive rebound in his career for him. Maxine Paler, NWA fame, set star in a horror movie. Jerry Lawler said he was doing good after knee replacement recovery and, of course, still recovering from the stroke they suffered. Swerve Strickland returned to the Indies for House of Glory to face Amazing Red. And then Ronda Rousey, we just talked about her, set to release her first graphic novel. Thoughts about any of that?
I guess you can't start anywhere but Jamie Kellner because he happened to pass away, I believe, the week leading up to the finale of Who Killed WCW, didn't he?
Oh my God. I think you might be right. Yeah.
Yeah, it was while that show was on the air anyway. I think it was leading into the finale, which was one of those just moments of fate and destiny that you possibly couldn't have organized. But especially because I think that I didn't actually watch I watched the first two episodes of Who Killed WCW. I didn't watch the last two because it got too Bischoffy for me and I lost my mind. But I figured Jamie Kellner was a pretty main character in that finale because he is historically the man who has been blamed for quote unquote killing WCW, or at least the man who like put the final nail in the coffin to take the company out of business and put it into the hands of WWE, I guess, by being the guy who's like, I want to cancel Nitro and Thunder, and thereby taking away the majority of the value of that company, which I think should say something that without the television deals, the company was utterly worthless. Without being propped up by Warner Brothers, Discovery, or TNT, or TBS, or Turner Broadcasting, I guess at the time, without being propped up by them at the time, the company was absolutely worthless. And maybe I would personally argue you should point fingers at the people who made it absolutely worthless without those television deals, instead of the person who ultimately made the call that these shows, we don't want them on our network. But that's just me. But yeah, like a really like bizarrely important figure in wrestling history for a dude who just headed up a television network.
Yeah, he passed away on, yeah, you're right. It was June 22nd, and or at least that's when the news came out. And yeah, the final episode of the show, it was June 25th that came out. Wow, how about that? It's very, very strange timing there for sure.
Absolutely bizarre, but like I'm glad. But like when he passed, I think there was a lot of people being like, he has gotten undue blame for the death of WCW over the years, and I think he has become like an easy scapegoat for the people who are more responsible for the damage done to that company than ultimately the dude who was like, these shows are kind of dying a death. We're gonna just kill it.
And you mentioned that reminds me of a point you brought up during one of the the podcast clips I was referencing earlier. This we when it comes to history, it seems that for so many fans, history doesn't go past the Attitude Era slash the Monday Night Wars, right? And that's all they want to go back to instead of going back further for some more interesting stuff. I thought that was a great point you guys made during one of those clips I mentioned.
Yeah, and it's a shame because like again, we made a documentary this year. Not me personally, like the world. I made a documentary about who killed WCW, a thing that has been litigated to death. You know, it's not new, it's not fresh. There was no new perspectives there. It was an all right, it was a good show. Like, but like there was nothing there that nobody had already learned or said a million times. And then like you watch the big Vince McMahon Netflix documentary, and that gets so bogged down in Attitude Era Monday Night Wars stuff again. And just like we can't get away from that as like the gravitational force that this industry is still being pulled back to. Like it's 23 years, nearly 24 years since these companies went out of business, since WCW and ECW went down. And I think, or like we just had an NXT episode built around ECW nostalgia in the ECW arena, you know? We're still so trapped in the gravitational pull of that era of wrestling that I think we could all do better by just charging forward and thinking about and talking about new and different things. Even older wrestling than that would be more interesting than covering that same stuff over and over and over again to death.
Yep, I would agree. So before we let you go, we're obviously have you've wrapped up June. Well done, nice tidy under an hour. That's quite impressive. So we're able to get through all that. A lot of interesting things, of course, that happened during the month. But before we let you go, let's give you a chance for where people can follow you on social media and also can check out the podcast, which is really entertaining.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Garrett Kidney, GarrettKidney, also on Blue Sky, the same handle. We do a podcast, me and Liam Jones, my podcast co-host, who you can find on Twitter at The Gleet Muta. He insists I plug his Twitter on every podcast appearance I ever do, and I will. But you can find here, we do a TNA history podcast where we cover TNA 1 month at a time. So we go through month by month, covering all the news, covering all the shows that month. And looking back on TNA history, we're currently, our next episode will be October 2006. So we're in a very interesting period at the moment with both the return of Vince Russo to the company and the debut of Kurt Angle. So those two things coinciding, which less than ideal that those two things happen to coincide. But that's where we are right now. So it's a very exciting period in TNA history. So if you want to check that out, we're on all your favorite podcast platforms of choice and YouTube, as you mentioned. So you can find us anywhere. Just search You've Got to Be Kidding Me, and you should find us somewhere.
Excellent stuff. All right, Gary. Well, this is a great debut appearance. I really enjoyed this talk and looking forward to have you again and all that. Garrett Kidney, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, Josh.